the 12th pick in the 2025 NBA draft, the Chicago Bulls select Noah Essengay from Saint-Jean-du-Bray, France, and the Ulm Club in Germany.
I think I'm someone who just, you know, bring everything on the court, energy, defensively, offensively. I'm going to get everything I got for the team.
Mullion Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, the score. There's the pick last night, and you heard from the kid there right after, and we are delighted to welcome in Mark Eversley. He joins us on the Aturo Tire Hotline. Aturo, your hometown tire, aturo.com. Good morning, Mark. How you doing?
Doing well. Good morning, guys. How you guys doing?
Great to catch up with you. And really fun stuff. We've been having a lot of fun. Do you buy this connection, this idea that the draft, for the second year running, let's put it that way, you kind of got a player who fell to you that you didn't anticipate might be there? Is this similar to what happened last year with Matas?
I mean, there's a couple similarities. Definitely, we had Matas higher on our board last year. Our board this year, we had Noah a little bit lower than what Matas was last year. But, you know, it was a nice surprise when he was sitting there when we were ready to select the 12. And we had a couple options, and we decided to go with Noah. And, you know, we're thrilled and pleased with the pick.
How are you evaluating what is the ideal timetable for his development? It's clear, or at least it seems from the outside, that the Bulls are taking the long view here, playing the long game, whether it's in drafting Matas last year and now somebody who it feels very similar to a year ago. The morning after the draft, we're saying similar things about Matas Bezelis, and he had a heck of a rookie year. When you look at Noah Essengay, is he somebody that projects immediately into the rotation, or what is the development plan in your mind?
You know, I'm not a coach. Our job is to select players and hand them over to the coaches. I think for us, you know, we're going to work in collaboration with our coaches and put together, you know, a player development plan for him both on and off the court. You know, I don't think it's fair for me to put any kind of timelines on or expectations on the kid this quickly. I think when you look at what Matas did last year, I think if you go back and look at the first, you know, 41 games, Matas was, he kind of got time here and there, a little bit of sprinkle time here and there. And, you know, it wasn't until after the All-Star break to where he really, you know, found his groove and found, you know, he was able to adapt to the speed of the game, the quickness of the game, the physicality of the game. You know, our hope is that Noah has a similar path, but if he doesn't, you know, that's going to be okay. I think he's the person who will determine when and if he earns minutes, and it's really on him. We're going to create an environment here in this building to where, you know, he'll be able to come in here every single day, work on his body, work on his game, and, you know, he'll determine, you know, if and when he plays and how much he plays.
I'm curious, Mark, when you were scouting this kid, when you were going over everything, how would you compare the basketball Bundesliga to the various other maybe college conferences? Is it a higher level than that? Is it a lower level than the G League? Like, where I'm just trying to determine where that league fits in sort of the understanding of international leagues.
You know, I think a fair comparison is something similar to the G League, and I use that comparison because it's mostly men. You know, they're no longer college kids.
Right.
You know, and that's what really attracted us to Noah was here's an 18-year-old playing against men every single night, practicing against men every single night, and he had a ton of success, and that was extremely attractive to us. No different than when, you know, you look back a year, you know, Matas spending – you know, his time with G League Ignite. He was playing against men every single night. So there's similarities. Obviously, you know, I don't know exactly. You can't compare them exactly, but there's a lot of similarities in that, you know, they're both playing against men every single night.
Mark, you look around the Eastern Conference. Obviously, you look at what happened with Jason Tatum in Boston and what that did to the Celtics next year. The Pacers are dealing with Tyrese Halliburton with Achilles missing next season, and they are going to be a different team. Milwaukee with Dame Lillard, same kind of situation. The Eastern Conference would seem to be up for grabs. Did that play a role, or what role did that play in your thought process and decision-making and who to draft rather than somebody who might be a season or two away from contributing versus somebody who might be ready to contribute right away? Did that come up much at all?
I think the approach we're going to take is, you know, similar to how you, you know, introduced it, was we're going to take a little longer approach. I think we're going to be a little more pragmatic in terms of our decision-making. You know, the East is what it is. And, you know, you look at a team like Detroit who, you know, the year prior, you know, they made a big jump last year. Indiana made a huge jump this year and making it to the finals. We observe all those things, but we don't let it dictate how we're going to operate. We've got a plan in place. We want to stick to that plan. We don't want to skip steps. And, you know, it's not to say we won't be opportunistic. If there's something that makes a lot of sense that we can jump at and we feel, you know, it's a good move for the ball club, then we'll do it. But we're going to stick to our plan. We're going to be pragmatic. We're going to be really thoughtful on how we operate. And, you know, we'll keep an eye on the league and monitor things as they go.
I heard someone told us that he's played in the German professional league now for 2 years, which would indicate he started playing professionally as a 16-year-old. Has he been playing against grown men, as we talk about, since he was 16? And I know the kid's very tall, but that's still, like, extraordinary if that's the case.
And it's part of the attraction as to why we selected him last night. The first time I saw him play live for Ulm was last October. He was 17 years old.
Wow.
And Ulm played a preseason game against the Portland Trailblazers. Interesting story, and I'll try and be brief, but they flew from Istanbul 2 nights before. Their plane got diverted to Seattle. They jumped on a bus and drove 3 hours from Seattle to Portland, got to the hotel, quickly changed, drove over to the Moda Center. We got to watch them practice for 2 hours. They went full out, went back to the hotel, slept, and played the next night, got on a plane that night, and flew back home to Germany. And for me, to watch those kids, especially Noah, in that environment for 48 hours, and the resiliency, toughness, just, it was super, super impressive.
Talking with Bull General Manager Mark Eversley here on the Mullion Haas Show on 670 The Score. So that brings up another aspect of this that is somewhat fascinating. He doesn't have much experience in American culture or in America at all. And that had to be something in terms of your conversation and looking into his background, how he might adapt and adjust. What did you find in looking into those things that made you feel comfortable that a teenager, the second youngest player in the draft, would be able to assimilate as quickly as you hope he will?
It's full credit to our scouting staff, you know, both in Europe and here in Chicago. Is we made multiple phone calls. We talked to multiple people, coaches, trainers, anybody who was associated with the kid. And it got us to a place where we were comfortable selecting him. We had an opportunity to interview him via Zoom. You know, we got to see him practice in an environment, in his own environment. All of those data points gave us the confidence to know that if we put a plan in place for him and support him, that he'll get everything he needs to help him assimilate, one, as, you know, somebody off the court, and two, put together a player development plan here in this building, that he will flourish in time.
How many languages does this kid speak? It was incredible to hear how good his English was. And obviously he speaks French. I don't know if he speaks German, having lived in Germany for a couple of years. And, you know, there are certainly examples of European athletes, European citizens that speak multiple languages. I'm just curious, because it indicates he's pretty bright, listening to him speak English.
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that. I would suspect that he knows a little bit of German. you know, our executive vice president, Arturis, is he's multilingual, yeah. You know, of course, playing over there. So, you know, it just speaks to the kid, right? And his English is pretty good. His French, obviously, that's his native tongue. And, you know, I would think that he knows a little bit of German, but I don't know that for sure.
Logistically, what happens now? Will he go back and finish? I believe his German team is in the league finals. Will he be part of that? When will he report to Chicago to play as part of the summer league team? And do you worry about his transition as he kind of is it between two continents?
So fortunately, he's in New York. We have somebody from the team on the ground who will meet with him today. Plan is for him to travel to Chicago this weekend, and the plan is for him not to go back to Germany. He'll be with us through summer league. We'll get him in front of our trainers and in front of our coaches here this weekend and do a full assessment, and you know, we'll make a determination if we feel he's going to be ready to play in summer league. Hopefully he will be. Post summer league, you know, he'll probably go back home to Germany, and then we'll look to bring him back over here, you know, sometime in August.
Mark, we have heard, at least heading into the draft, all of these rumors about multi-trades and how the whole thing was kind of up for grabs. There were some trades, but it was nothing to the extent that we imagined. I know you guys had the opportunity, if you chose to go up or to go down or to do whatever you wanted. Was there a lot of trade talk? Were you involved in a lot of these things? You have a lot of guys under contract. I'm just wondering if, with free agency coming up next, if you believe there will be trades or not trades.
With respect to the draft, we looked at several scenarios, like you mentioned, moving up, moving back, you know, and nothing materialized. Of course, we picked that 12 and we were quite happy. You know, leading into the draft, we've had a lot of conversations with a lot of teams about a lot of different iterations. Nothing has popped to date. I'm sure we will continue those conversations, you know, as early as today with the second round being tonight. And then as we head towards free agency, we'll kind of level set and see where we're at and make a determination on whether we're going to sign somebody or not come July 1.
I know last night you made it a priority to publicly express the confidence the organization has in Billy Donovan. And obviously you don't discuss contract details, but the commitment is pretty apparent because of what he means to this organization, how he evaluates talent and develops players. What role did Billy play in assessing your potential draft picks? And what role did he play in the final choice that you made?
The great thing about Billy is he's here every single day. He's usually the first person in the building. As we kind of prepared for the draft leading up to the draft, he's been part of our meetings on a daily basis. He was in the room last night along with Jerry and Michael. This is a collaborative effort. And, you know, I think Billy trusts in us that, you know, we made the right selection and we're going to bring players in here who can help us win games. He's been an incredible leader for us. He kind of sets the tone here in this building every single day. He's been a pleasure to work with.
You know, I understand that the Knicks reportedly contacted you guys about him. I'm just wondering how that worked. Who did they call? How quick was the conversation? Was that ever anything you entertained? And obviously, we personally think very highly of Billy. Think he did a great job. I think your comment earlier about Matas and the way that he kind of helped develop him last year is an important thing to remember when you're drafting a guy like Noah this year. What can you tell us about that whole turn of events?
So the Knicks did call and request permission. We denied them permission, and it just speaks to you know, the leader that Billy is and how much confidence we have in him. You know, he's the head coach of this team and we love having him in the building. I wasn't part of that process, so I can't really speak much on it.
So last night, Mark, you talked about the Bulls being a team in transition, and whether it's that phrase or Arturis Karnišovas talking about shrinking the timeline. I think it reflects, you know, the plan, and it may be a plan that requires more patience from the fan base than maybe it's not as hard for you to be that patient as it is for some fans who are growing, you know, restless a little bit with the way things have gone in recent years. What can you say to those people who are looking at this and seeing another player drafted who will take maybe a season or two to develop? And he joins a group that has some developmental, you know, yeah, it's going to require the patience that you talked about. And and how long before you start to see some results?
You know, I would look at how we end the season this past year, 15-5 down the stretch. Obviously, you know, a bitter loss in the play-in game. But the players who played in that game, Giddey, White, Herder, Modest, Vooch, you know, those guys all log big minutes. They're all coming back. They're all going to be with us. That's the plan. You know, now we layer in guys like Patrick Williams, Jalen Smith. You know, Io DeSumo is coming back from injury. Zach Collins was a nice addition at the trade deadline. The beauty is we don't have to rely on Noah Esengwe. We don't have to rely on these young guys in the immediate future. They're going to be given a pathway to develop and contribute when they earn those minutes. So for the fans, I say, you know, the way we ended the season last year, playing a bunch of young guys, you know, developing a style of play that's exciting, you know, that's what I point to. Yes, there's going to be, you know, there's likely to be, you know, tough games and tough nights, but there's also going to be fun nights, you know, similar to, you know, Giddey's half-court heave against the Lakers. Those are the things I want fans to point to and just know that every single day these guys are in here, you know, working their tails off, trying to get better and grow as a team.
Mark, I'm curious about tonight. You were pretty forthright in talking about having the 45th pick, the second round pick. We know all the contracts that the team has. Just curious if you're going to do one of those kind of draft and stash routines. I just love that concept. I love saying that. It just sounds so like international intrigue. But what, have you made a decision? Will it come down to how things fall?
I think it's going to come down to how things fall. We're going to continue to look at all options with respect to that pick. And again, I talked about it last night, whether that's a draft and stash. We may look at a move up or move back option. And of course, there's always a move out completely option. So right. We'll look at everything and we'll make a decision that's going to best meet the needs of the team.
Mark, you mentioned Josh Giddey and that 47-foot shot against the Lakers, and he did much more than that in the second half of the season. He really came around, and you saw what his value is. Now you get to determine what his value is. What is the next step with Josh Giddey in terms of his status contractually?
So when the right time comes up, we'll reach out to his representatives, and you know we'll start to talk about what the future looks like with Josh. And like you said, his second half of the season was terrific. It's a small peek into a window of, you know, why we traded for him. After the deadline, you know, there was more opportunity, and he did a great job seizing the moment. And, you know, he's been terrific for us, especially the second half of the season. We hope he's with us long term. And when the opportunity presents itself, we'll reach out to his representation and begin those discussions.
It's kind of a fun time, I suppose, whenever you talk about draft, whenever you talk about player development. I know you told KC yesterday, or at least I saw it, he was the one who tweeted it, that you're going to have Matas practice with the Summer League team. I don't know if that means he'll play in the Summer League, but he'll be there and be able to practice with guys, which is, I think, a really solid idea. And you just told us that Noah will be there as well. It's kind of fun when you get to a point where you start picturing a couple of guys playing together. And I think we have a pretty good feel for the guys that are on your team, and you've mentioned them. That's going to be fun, just seeing what Billy can do and how that all works out with style of play, et cetera. I'm sure that came into play when you made this decision.
It is going to be fun. And, you know, Modest will go to Summer League training camp is what we call it. It'll be right here at the Advocate Center. And then we'll determine how many games he plays in Summer League. I think what the summer provides is an opportunity for players to get better. Most of those opportunities are in drills. What Summer League provides is an opportunity for our players to play in a controlled environment, which is appealing to us. Modest's last game was our last game of the season when he played 5-on-5. And to be able to go to Vegas and play 5-on-5, again, in a controlled environment with real referees, we hope it's an opportunity that he takes. And, we'll sit down and discuss with him what that could look like. And again, it's going to be fun because, to see those two guys out there on the court come July, it'll give us a small little peek into a window of what the future may look like.
Quickly, before I let you go, you mentioned having a Zoom interview with Essengay in terms of the pre-draft process. When did you first meet him in person? What was your first impression when you did?
So I personally have not met him in person. We'll meet him this weekend. When we do go scout kids, there's so many rules that prohibit us from having interactions with him. But again, the Zoom interview was great. He came across as, bright, articulate, funny, super engaging, and we just got a really great feel from him.
Great stuff. Thanks so much. We really appreciate your time, Mark.
Thank you, Mark.
Hey, guys, have a great day.
Thank you.
That is Mark Eversley, the general manager of the Chicago Bulls. Good to hear him talk about that. He did actually say Vooch. He used him as another guy who's back. So
yeah, well, they haven't traded him yet. He's under contract, so that's understandable.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just double checking. I heard everything correctly.
You did hear that correctly.
312-644-6767. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
You mentioned having a Zoom interview with Essengay in terms of the pre-draft process. When did you first meet him in person? What was your first impression when you did?
So I personally have not met him in person. We'll meet him this weekend. When we do go scout kids, there's so many rules that prohibit us from having interactions with him. But again, the Zoom interview was great. He came across as, bright, articulate, funny, super engaging, and we just got a really great feel from him.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. You, Mr. David, have met the Bulls' new draft pick, Noah Essengay, as many times as Mark Eversley has.
I have not met him, and I don't believe they have either, as we just heard.
But he's seen him play in person. We know that. He went out to Portland and watched him play.
Watched him play in person.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Never.
It's just interesting to me. Maybe this is the way the modern NBA operates because there's so much of a European infusion of talent and youth and the way that this calendar, the NBA calendar, the international calendar structured and the rules that exist with tampering and pre-draft contact. I just was surprised that they had basically identified and drafted a player who they believe is a cornerstone of the franchise. It's not overstating it. And they will meet him for the first time in person, shake his hand, look him in the eye this weekend.
Yeah.
That's new. I feel old.
Yeah, that's different. You're
because
right.
Because it's
but that's
gone are the days where you make it a first impression by how you connect with somebody in a room, how you handle that part of it, how you...
But in fairness, they've probably never met Ace Bailey either.
That's true.
Ace Bailey probably didn't want to meet them.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's true.
He wanted to meet anyone.
Well, it's a good thing that Ace Bailey got what he wanted, that big market of Salt Lake City.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. You know what? That may end up being a good spot for him in terms of... They had a good draft. I'm just looking at the draft last night. Walter Clayton Jr. and Ace Bailey.
That's a good draft.
If you are Danny Ainge and you're feeling pretty good about your draft class, I don't know what else you're feeling good about, but they have nice mountains out there.
Yeah, and it will give them something to sing about.
Perhaps. But
if they had a Tabernacle choir.
All right, we just had a quality 20 minutes with Mark Eversley.
That was fun.
Is that the biggest takeaway?
they didn't know him? No, I liked a lot of what he had to say.
What did you like? Here's another thing that people caught on the text line, and I think yes. this is easy to understand. He did refer to Vooch as a player coming back
yes.
and contributing.
He's under contract.
He's under contract, and yes. until they trade him, they have to treat him as such.
I like that he was forthright about the fact that they thought about moving up and moving down, and there were different trade possibilities that were there. I think we understand what their roster looks like, how many players are under contract. Mm-hmm. It'll be very curious to me if they trade out of their pick this year. I just don't know that they can afford to sign someone right now. And I think that they will, as we move forward, trade a couple of people. But I don't know how much different. I think the roster will be very similar to the one we saw last year. Mm-hmm. With a couple, including the player drafted last night.
Essengay will be added. The mid-level exception will be added.
Yes.
So that'll be the 15th guaranteed contract.
Yes.
And they can go beyond that in the offseason. It's unlikely that they will. So you're going to have a very – well, again, it's easy to say this the morning of June 26th, the night after the draft. There's still some activity. Free agency may spur some trade movement throughout the league.
So. Yeah, I mean they you know, he was forthright about the fact that they've been talking to people and that they will continue to talk to people. And free agency could indeed spur some kind of action. I don't know that it is going to. I don't know that it will, but I do think it's curious. He mentions Vooch because he's on the roster, because he's on the team. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's a good idea to have him on the team to start next season.
Depends on what your goal is.
Exactly correct.
The Bulls yep. have positioned themselves by drafting Essengay into a situation, and they're entering a situation where, because of the Eastern Conference that we keep talking about, they look at the second half of the season, they might think that the way they finish the season encourages them to think that they could be competitive in the first half of next year. And by competitive, I mean better than they were in the first half of last year.
Yeah.
And in the mix, top six. I don't want to say top four, but you look around the conference, and there are a lot of teams that are just kind of like, well, if this happens, then.
I think one of the things that I heard from him, and he didn't say it, but it's an underlying theme, they like their group. They like the players themselves. They like the way they play together.
Mm-hmm.
I think they like that more than maybe we do.
Well, there's no question about that, Molly. Yeah. It's a really good observation and point, because the way, and I think to further that a little bit, the way that Matas Bezelis really adapted quickly and also developed, it was linear.
Yeah, it was.
It was first half of the season, not so good, but then he started doing this.
Yes.
And because of that success, I think they feel better, maybe even more empowered to draft a guy like Essengay.
Well, I would also wonder, David, if as we think about what went on with Matas and how Billy kind of controlled his minutes and then he made him earn the right to play by being a better defensive player. This kid is coming here as a better defensive player than offensive player. So does that mean he gets on the floor quicker in a scheme like Billy's?
Yes. Yes, because also it's what he takes pride in most. Unless he's going to get moved around, shoved around because he's not physically
yes.
there yet. But
which
if he can
possible.
If he
yes.
can offset that with some really good athleticism, good feet, good.
But he's also a multi-position defender. He's not just a guy who's a rim protector.
He's positionless.
He will obviously have to play a position. But I'm saying
he's a four. So is Matas. They're both fours. But it doesn't matter.
I think they might both be threes. I wonder if either guy's a
you
four.
Say three, I say four. You say four, I say three.
I'm calling him two guards now, and I'm going to be done with it.
I'm trying to figure out, too, as a Bulls fan, like, what's – so now the message is a longer approach where team in transition, because before it was shrink the timeline,
yes.
2026.
Yes.
Now it's longer. That don't sound
they're next year. They're the same thing.
No, that doesn't sound like
But I think they're the same thing. It's a good question, Brandon. I think that it's just a matter – it's semantics – and I'm not speaking on behalf of them, but I think they mean the same thing. When AK is talking about shrinking the timeline, he's talking about not being as much of a developmental team. And maybe if you think 3 5 years, they're thinking 3 years, or 2 3 years, they're thinking next year. But Mark Eversley's talking about a team in transition. That's the easiest label to attach to any team.
Yeah.
You're constantly in a state of transition. And I think the Bulls are one of those teams that you will – it's kind of pay-as-you-go type of thing. You kind of know what you are the further you go along. They didn't know what they were going to be the beginning of last year.
I like shrink the timeline as a T-shirt. Transition doesn't make a good
team. Team in transition isn't
catchy. It's kind of the same. They're just – they're in transition is encouraging in that it means – a couple of the older veterans could be traded. At least that's the way I hear it, which I like.
Brandon, do you hear team in transition and you think long-term project?
He thinks rebuild.
Yeah, I also go off his interview. With you, when you guys asked the question about the change in the East, did that change your approach? And he said, we're still going with the longer approach. Mm-hmm. So when I hear long, I just feel like, oh, this don't sound like it's going to be 2026. That don't sound like shrinking the timeline. That seems like we're going to have to wait another year or two. And I'm just thinking of Buzelev's development. And now with Noah, I'm like, these guys are probably not going to be good to 2 years.
Good question. I think what AK was responding to was, are you going to go a full rebuild and tank, and start over? No, we're going to shrink the timeline. We're not. They're not tanking. They didn't tank.
No, they're not. They didn't tank.
They
I don't think they're going to tank.
Maintaining,
this year.
Yeah. And they're mired in mediocrity. They're stuck in the middle. Yeah. And to him, that is maybe shrinking the timeline because they're not going all the way down before they start to go back up.
To me, that sounds like still the Pacers. They're trying to do the Pacers and Thunder approach. It's just like we're going to be in the middle right now, wait for the right trade, get some young guys now.
That's
and then
exactly
as the
right.
season goes, we'll see how the direction goes each season, depending on how this season goes.
And it keeps the fan base coming to games.
And I also think that when you say shrink the timeline, I think what he's saying is to, you know, keep exactly what you're talking about. Stay in the mix. Even if it is just the play-in stuff, Billy said to us that, you know, you don't talk about how important these games at the end of the year are for player development. And playing in big games that will determine whether you get in the play-in or not, or the game in the play-in to get to a playoff is almost like going to help with the development of players.
I know this won't surprise you, but one of the most encouraging things that he said.
Yeah.
Or is that Billy Donovan is there every day?
Yeah, that is.
His first one there in the morning.
Yep.
He's there making, you know, he's involved in every conversation.
Yes.
He is the coach in title and name.
Yep.
But he also, I got to believe, is very instrumental in establishing the vision for this franchise.
He's in partnership.
Yeah. And this is a true collaboration, and they are in sync, in line, whatever the contract situation is. We believe this probably they're aligned that way too, but having him as a constant presence, he's not one of these coaches that takes off, never back in the building until closer to camp. I like that inclusion because his involvement is important.
The Knicks didn't call Mark Eversley. Do you think they called AK, or could they have had a conversation with Jerry or Michael?
Who do you think they
– Well, they were all in the room.
Yeah. Well,
at the draft. I'm just wondering.
Well, if they're going to do that, I think the way it would work is it would be Michael Reinsdorf or AK.
Okay.
Yeah, just based on their titles.
But I would think it's AK.
Yeah.
But maybe they called Michael.
Maybe so. But I think that it was an easy decision.
Could Jerry was in the room for the draft.
Yeah, he was there. It's a big night.
Okay.
Sox already had a day game, too.
Okay.
Sox had already won, so he was free. Plenty of time. It's a long day. Yesterday was a long day.
I'm just asking.
What do you think?
Just think it's interesting that he was in the draft room.
He owns a team.
I'm well aware.
Of course he's in the draft room.
Okay.
If you owned a team, wouldn't you be involved in all drafts, all big decisions? You'd be a meddling owner.
You
would be meddlesome.
I would not be.
You would definitely.
I would let people do their jobs. You know how I am. Just get out of the way. It's all up to you. Do what you wish. I have no demands on your time or anyone's.
This is a big day. This is Shota time. Yeah. Shota Imanaga returns to the mound today. Cubs wrap up the series against the Cardinals. Pregame coverage right here, 12:40, first pitch, 1:15, on the score in the Southwest Airlines Cubs radio network.
I saw Layla in the hallway. I believe Marshall's in, too. We'll talk to them next. Mullion Haw on the score.